That was Gene Casey playing his guitar to introduce this month's North Fork Works. Gene Casey live, sitting right next to me as we begin our conversation. It's a real treat, Gene, that you've agreed to be my guest today. But I also want to mention that you are a good friend of WPKN and that you and Howard Thompson, our music director, are great friends and neighbors.
It's true.
So as somebody who also lives and works on the North Fork, welcome to North Fork Works, Gene Casey.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's really great to have you here. I can't go any further without also congratulating you for recently being honored with the Long Island Sound Award from the Long Island Music Hall of Fame. I'm sure that means that you've been interviewed more than usual and asked some of the same questions I'm afraid that I'll be asking you. So I'm sorry if it's going to be sort of tedious to answer the same questions.
I doubt that very much. I welcome it. Thank you.
Well, thank you. What I was wondering is, what has this award meant to you? Has it meant anything, or to your band?
Not so much for my band, but for me, yes. The band, they're very happy. I do most of my work with the band, and they're supportive. We all went out to dinner the other night and, you know, had a good couple toasts.
You were there?
I did. You know, I'm a big star, you know. I have to foot the bill.
Yeah.
The award means a lot to me because recognition or affirmation is very important for an artist. Not so much financially or with being a celebrity or any of that kind of superficial stuff, which, let's face it, money is pretty superficial in a spiritual sense.
Yeah.
But recognition and appreciation is always in the back of our minds or in the front of our minds as we perform and or do our work. So, you know, I've been enjoying what I do for a long time, sometimes well paid, most times not. And then you go home and that's it. But occasionally something happens that kind of just makes it official that people are appreciating what we're trying to do and they like it. And that makes me feel fantastic.
Yeah, I think that one of the problems with any creative person is that they don't get enough feedback. Mm-hmm. I'm always telling my colleagues at PKN, you've got to feedback. We don't know if anybody's listening.
True.
You know, I mean, some people do because they have really popular programs, but.
Right, especially radio, because like you said,
yeah.
You have no idea. There's no light that lights up or number that appears. It's just you hope for the best. What I do, how many people have a job where you get applause?
Mm.
You know, you hear a lot of things. You know, you hear good things and you get rejected quite a bit.
Yes.
Every time you go on stage, you're facing rejection or adulation, sometimes at the same time. It's hard to take either one seriously, especially in a performance because people get very excited. Some people will say things to you. You don't really know if they're sincere. You don't know who they are. So what you do, you just kind of accept all of it. I try not to take either extreme very seriously because it's taking too much from me. But when you have feedback, for instance, an award is a very nice gesture, and it kind of makes me think maybe we're doing something right.
Do you consider that affirmation also comes each time you get a booking or you have a gig that somebody contracts with you? Same kind of, different kind of affirmation?
My day book is full, and people are showing up to see us play. That's a good indication that things are going well. You know, after a good gig, driving home, very often I'll just run down certain things that happened, things I learned, things that didn't go well, things I need to work on, or a particularly good moment. It feels good.
Mm.
A sense of a job well done is very, very important.
Yeah, I could never be a performer.
It can be very humiliating. And at the same time, 5 minutes later, someone's saying you're the greatest thing they've ever seen. The main thing is that as a performer, or as a musician, or artist, you have to believe that you're doing good work. And there's really no one that can tell you that other than yourself. But it's good to have the feedback, like you said.
Yeah, I understand. Our listeners, I think, would be interested to know, can we just go do a little bit of your history thing in terms of where you were born and how you came to North Fork?
Sure.
You were not born on North Fork?
No. I'm a recent migrant. I was born in Queens, in Elmhurst, Queens. My father was a New York City detective.
Yeah.
My mom's a housewife, and he was a World War II Marine. The classic, get out of the war, get a job, move to the suburbs, which they did, to Malvern, which is in Nassau County. Mm-hmm. That's where I grew up. And I moved into the big city when I was in my early 20s. I also did some traveling. I lived in Nashville, Tennessee for a better part of a year, came back. In my late 20s, I moved to Sac Harbor on the South Shore. I was offered a job working construction just for the summer, I thought, and I ended up staying. And that's where I actually began the Loan Sharks, my group.
You weren't playing any music before then?
I was. I was playing in the city, you know, the old punk rock days, CBGBs, Blood Club.
Yeah.
I played all those clubs. But it was very frustrating because there were a zillion bands and no one was paying well. You'd go on at 1 o'clock in the morning, you'd have to split $80 between four musicians. And it was not looking very promising. And really with just no idea other than to get a steady job, I came out east. I would go out and I'd see back then, a lot of places to play music, just bars, restaurants. And they were paying much better than Manhattan. Mm. And I just decided to put together a group just to have fun, play the music I loved and get the free beer and just really for like a guy's night out, you know. And then it kind of just took off from there. It became my job.
I have been researching you a little bit. And from what I also heard is that you have a great deal of respect for your band, that you think they know music.
Well, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Well, what does it mean to know music?
Very few of us actually can read music.
Can you?
I cannot. No.
You cannot read music.
I've tried to learn, and it's very difficult for me. So everything's by ear. But this music that we play is primarily created by head arrangements instead of written down. Like the Count Basie band was famous for just coming up with a riff that everyone learned and then just improvising from that. Well, rock and roll and blues, that's basically how that came about. Very rough, very by the seat of your pants. What I mean by knowing music is having a feel for the spirit of the music, the rhythms, and I think it's very important to have a knowledge of the history because that's how you really learn the different styles and how they developed, and that all affects how you play. And generally, our group, we can just sit and talk for hours about the minutiae of music.
And give me an example, how minute it gets.
Ridiculously detailed and obscure. The string Charlie Christian played, the kind of microphone that Elvis Presley used, that RCA, you know, stuff that would drive people batty having to listen to. Did you hear the story about the time that, Billie Holiday did this and so on? All that stuff is rich for inspiration. And knowing that stuff, I think, does influence how you appreciate what you're doing. You value it. You're part of that tradition in your own way. You're part of that long tradition. I've played with musicians that were technically superior, knew, could read anything, could write stuff, but they lacked the feel, lacked the intimate passion for the music, and it showed. And I wasn't really that interested in working with someone like that.
Do you learn a lot of this by reading?
Before the internet, every musician had the three or four essential books, but a lot of it's passed around. A lot of it's anecdotal and probably somewhat myth and legend, you know, and now, of course, with the internet, and there have been a lot more books and magazines and serious studies of what used to be considered frivolous and disposable.
You gave me the CD Untrained.
Yes.
And what I understand is this is a solo, semi-solo?
We've recorded as a group in the studio, and I've promoted the group with record releases in the past to varying degrees of success. It's very difficult to capture our sound in the studio. And a lot of what we do in a live situation is other material, you know, classic stuff. I don't like to use the word cover. When I record and I spend the money and the time in the studio, I like to record my own songs. And this last record, Untrained, was somewhat of a departure stylistically. And rather than try to fit a round peg in a square hole and try to make it more like the band, I decided I'll go where the songs take me. and not worry about it not sounding like the Loan Sharks.
Are you pleased with it?
I'm pleased with it. I always hear something I wish I'd done differently, but I think it shows an improvement, my knowledge. I'm more comfortable in the studio, and I think I'm maturing as a writer and a singer and musician. Mm.
That will take us into my next question, which is, how does the song come to you? Does it come to you, or does it feel like that? Or
yes, it's a spontaneous process. My brain works with just a flash of an idea. But I have learned, if I get a title, a line, a little melody, if that happens, I really have to pursue it right then and there. That river just disappears right away unless I jump on it. That's a phrase that hits me, lyric phrase, an idea. Mm-hmm. Very often will be a title. That's a good title. I overheard someone say that. Mm. That's a good title. And my brain immediately starts working with the rhythm and possible rhymes. And I could write it down. I could tape an idea down on the tape recorder. I can go back to it. It doesn't really work. I have to drop everything I'm doing, which is very inconvenient. But yeah, now I might just bolt out the door right now. But it does happen that way. And I've learned to respect when that happens. And if at all possible, go with it. And
so what would you do?
I would grab a piece of paper, whatever, envelope. If by some glorious chance I'm near my office, my studio, I will tape it. But however, I'd rather not tape it until whatever's going on in the brain connection, until I'm well into it, because I think the tape recorder can be inhibiting. Sometimes even picking up the guitar can change the mood. I like to have it pretty established in my head. Then, all right, take the guitar. What key do I do this in? What is that chord? And then turn on our tape recorder. So ideally, it's like a three-step process.
And what is your mood when you're like that?
I'm very much almost in a manic state, like a busy beaver, or I'm just, don't interrupt me, please. Don't call me up on the phone. Don't ask me about dinner. You know, I'm working on a song and I don't want to lose the thread. So I'm running around like a crazy person. I'll get the tape recorder, I'll record the thing, then I'll stop, then I'll go back to what I was doing, then halfway down the hallway, I say, oh boy, run back. It's probably very comical.
It's like catching it in bits and pieces almost?
Yes, yes. It's like running after a butterfly, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Well, I think there's something about the subconscious. I'm not very comfortable talking this way, but there's parallel or underneath the surface. There's that song exists, mm-hmm. or that story exists. It's just a matter of reaching it. If I'm doing something mundane like mowing the lawn or raking the leaves, or painting a wall, or hammering a nail. Something, you know, physical, but doesn't require a lot of brain power. I find I'm dipping into the subconsciousness, mm-hmm. and I get a lot of ideas doing things like that.
So you have to drop the hammer.
Which I'm glad to do, by the way.
Gene Casey is talking about his life and work as a musician, songwriter, and leader of the Loan Sharks band. This is Hazel Khan on North Fork Works on WPKN Radio.
The way people talk about you in the things that I've read.
Okay.
And there's a couple of sort of nice language that I read, and two things in particular. One is it fits into the award which you got because of you being, I guess, an intrinsic part of the music scene. Somebody said that you're a mainstay on the East Coast roots rock circuit since the late 80s. Is that accurate?
It means that I've been plugging away and
you're here to stay.
I think so.
That's what they mean.
Yeah, it's very gratifying to call up a venue or an agent or a booker and they already know who I am. That's just cuts ahead to the chase, you know.
But are you still surprised?
Oh, sure, because there are times I've been surprised the other way. thinking they know who I am, they don't.
Really?
Yeah, it's like that.
But the other thing, I thought this was really nice language, I'm sure you've heard, that your heart is really on the road in local roadhouses and bars. And somebody described you in one of these things as the premier barroom troubadour of Eastern Long Island. And then they continued, from Montauk to the Hamptons, up to Riverhead and any town with an Indian name. I love that description. I remember
that was a writer from Texas, Josh Friedman, whose father is Bruce J. Friedman. That's a nice phrase. Yeah, I like that one.
Is there something about sort of going to the bars? I mean, I think of Stephen Talkhouse.
Sure.
That kind of place.
Well, that's one of my regular haunts. Which isn't to say I would turn down an opportunity to play Carnegie Hall.
No. But is there something about that? Is that true as a musician, your kind of musician? Is there something that you like about those?
Yes.
Even though people don't smoke anymore.
They don't smoke anymore, which is very nice. It's nice because I'd be dead by now if I was inhaling all that smoke still. Yeah. But there's no artifice. There's no pageantry. There's no nonsense in a bar or a restaurant. People are there to drink, socialize, hopefully dance, and they want good, honest music and with no frills, and that's what we're good at supplying.
But wherever I heard you play, people do get up and dance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's stayed in my mind, or even if you're sitting in that, there's a gazebo place. Haven't you played there in Southold?
Yes.
Outside,
yes.
And then people, even out there, they start dancing.
Yeah, even though there's really not a dance floor of any sort.
And it's very joyful.
It's joyful.
It also seems to me, as you know, I'm not an American, I didn't grow up here, but it seems very American to me, that whole thing.
Mm.
And as our good friend Howard Thompson puts it, he said, when he lets loose his baritone, that's as American as you can get. And he really knows how to bring back the spirit of rock and roll. So I'm not sure. Can you talk about this idea of Americana or American?
It's interesting that the phrase Americana it's being used now to describe a lot of the music we play and the people like us play. I wasn't crazy about the term. Americana always seemed to be like, Norman Rockwell or quaint. I wouldn't want our people to think of our music as quaint and old-fashioned, although in ways it is. It's timeless or it's well-rooted.
Mm-hmm.
It's also because terms like rock and roll, terms like country music, terms like blues, they've almost lost their meaning because they mean almost nothing because they mean different things to different people. Just to call it American, probably not very illuminating to people. This music, the roots music that we're talking about, there's no coincidence that this music was made primarily after the Second World War, when everything American was seen as freedom and liberty and excitement and opportunity, colorful, loud. That's why the music exploded over in England, which became the 60s with the Beatles and so on. Loving American music, I think it's safe to say that the United States had a better reputation back then as well. And that's when this music that I love and I am part of was born, created. And not consciously, but maybe part of me is trying to retain that and trying to hold on to, this is what makes our country great. It's about black and white music, about poor people and opportunity and aggression in a good way and creativity and fun and dancing, like you said. I happen to think it is art.
Yeah, it's sort of expansive and it's inclusive.
It is. It brings people together.
Yeah. So that's what American means to you. And there's also a nostalgia. Does that make sense to you?
I understand that. The connection to the past is important. Because we're always going back to the reservoir, to the roots. But I never want this to be a nostalgic exercise or a let's pretend it's 1955, let's all get dressed up. That doesn't appeal to me. That seems very contrived and limiting. I contend that when we're playing, it's here and now, and we're all alive right now, and we're feeling what we feel now. It's not, hey, folks, remember the good old days when things were... It's not a tribute band. It's not an oldies act. But to me, this is happening right now.
I guess you get older just like we all do. I'm just wondering if there's anything that has changed in the way that you think about music or how you make music or if it's not like that.
Yes. I mean, you can't help but pay attention to that time changing. You get more selective. You start to have a sense of value, what's worth making the effort for. It's not a jaded, cynical value. You realize time is precious. Mm-hmm. And I take things more seriously. At the same time, I don't take it as seriously. My delusion factor of being a pop star, which was never very great because I never was in it to be a star. But I am on stage, you know, and I am performing for people. And I'm very conscious of keeping my dignity and keeping it valid and keeping it real for who I am at this stage of my life. You know, I always look for the great blues and jazz musicians that came before me, and a lot of them played to their dying breath until their 70s and 80s, and they kept at it, and those are my kind of role models for this. Musically speaking, which I think was your original question, the songs I'm writing these days, it's been pointed out to me that are definitely showing a perspective of time having moved on and looking back. My songs are a little deeper, a little bit more reflective, and I hate to use these words, they sound so pretentious. One of the great joys of playing music for a long time is that it gives you an opportunity to really start to understand and really learn what you're doing. And that might sound funny, but to improvise and to be an effective musician, experience is everything, because you learn what to leave out, you know, and leaving that space is very, very important. You know, when you're young, you're playing every note you can think of, mm-hmm. you're showing off how fast you can go. When you get older, you realize that I could be much more effective with less, and knowing what you have to say and what you can leave out is very, very important. Every great jazz musician has probably said this, and that can only happen with time, you know, and you learn your voice as a singer, you learn to take little shortcuts, you learn your strengths. You're not trying to kill people all the time with your, you know, your power.
Your bass.
Well, my voice definitely has lowered, and I'm much more selective with what I do.
Is it sort of you're less, I hate to use this word, and I don't mean it pejorative, but you show off less? Yeah.
Your strengths change, mm-hmm. so you go with that.
You sound as if you quite enjoy all of that.
Oh, I love it.
The change.
I do. The discovery.
Yeah, discovery.
Yeah. It's very gratifying and rewarding to realize, oh, I can do this now. I couldn't do this before. Mm-hmm. Or I can't do that anymore, so I have to do something else. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the maturing process as a musician. And that's, if you're lucky enough to keep playing, you're going to have those moments.
I understand that you are in the process of a new recording, a new album.
A new album. A collection that has at least a musical theme, if not a lyrical theme, a collection of songs that has a place in time. Mm-hmm. That's how I was introduced to popular music. Mm. I'm not crazy about the fact that people will just download one song and there's no cohesion, you know, but I am doing another album as well as we're going to do another record with the band of just the classic material, like a live recording. The first one is going to be, you know, another one of all my original songs in studio recordings.
Just you?
Me with, and without the band, and with maybe some guests.
I see. Yeah. And is there a theme there you can talk about?
It's too early to say. Mm-hmm. There's definitely, as I mentioned earlier, a sense of kind of more reflective, wiser, if I can say that, a more mature perspective.
So this question, it's a question from Howard Thompson. And I'm asking you this with apologies to the Loan Sharks, because if they told you they couldn't play with you anymore, and if you could have a dream backup band, who would be the players in that band? And we have no holds barred here. It could be people alive, dead. Who would you want on drums?
Earl Palmer. Earl Palmer was the premier rock and roll rhythm and blues drummer out of New Orleans. He played on with Fats Domino, Little Richard, and he moved to L.A. and he was on a lot of sessions in the 60s with the Beach Boys and Phil Spector. He is probably one of the inventors of the rock and roll beat, swinging, driving, you can't help but dance. Okay. Earl Palmer on drums.
On drums. And bass?
I would pick the great Willie Dixon from Chicago. Was the bass player for Muddy Waters, Chuck Berry, Bo Diddley. Big man, played the upright bass, really could wallop the bass.
Okay. What about rhythm guitar?
No one. I don't like playing with another guitar player.
Yeah, okay. That's easy. So there wouldn't be a lead guitar?
Either. I'd be the lead in rhythm. Lead. Okay. Sorry.
So then we've got three more sets of instruments. One is a piano.
Well, you know, I love guys like Jerry Lee Lewis, but I can't imagine being in a band with him. I would have to say, let's say Booker T. Jones. Booker T. of Booker T. and the MGs from Memphis. Played the organ mostly, and piano. He could play with everyone from Willie Nelson to Otis Redding. And it was brilliant.
Okay, we better book him then.
Yeah.
And what about organs?
Well, let's say Booker T. for organ.
As well?
For piano, let's say, I'll say Richard Manuel of the group The Band. Very gospel-based, but could rock out as well. Richard okay. Manuel.
Okay, and finally would be horns.
Well, let's have, I would use King Curtis, who played with all the people on Atlantic Records. He played with, you know, Laverne Baker and Ruth Brown. He played with Buddy Holly, he played with John Lennon. King Curtis, he played with Aretha Franklin too. He would be my main sax guy. But I'd also have Lee Allen. Lee Allen worked with Little Richard and Fats Domino. And so that's two saxes. And trumpet, that's a tough one because I'm not an expert on by any means on trumpet. But I think, let's say, Andrew Love of the Memphis Horns, who played with Otis Redding.
Anything else to add there?
No, that's a pretty damn good band, I think.
So, as I said, I didn't want to offend the loan sharks to think that they might be displaced or replaced.
Ah, they'll understand.
So I think we should end with you just saying how people listening in can find out about your music.
So oh, I have a website, yes. You could go to genecasey.com or loansharks.com. And remember now, that's L-O-N-E.
Yeah.
That has my history and how you can get our music and where we're playing. And, you know, we're on Facebook and all that jazz.
And where you're playing is on loansharks.com?
Loansharks.com. We have our calendar there, yeah.
Well, I had no idea that our conversation would take the path that it has.
Well, I've enjoyed the path.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I had no idea that it would be so philosophical and so profound. So I'm really, really happy about that. Thank you very much.
I want to say in this, really, all the local artists appreciate stations like WPKN for supporting us. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I wish we could do more to support everybody. We've got to support ourselves.
All right.
Please do donate to WPKN so we can have more conversations like this. Thank you very much, Gene. It's lovely.
Thank you, Hazel.
You've been listening to Gene Casey, musician, songwriter and leader of the Loan Sharks band. North Fork Works is heard on the first Wednesday of the month at 7:30 p.m. on WPKN 89.5 FM and WPKN.org. North Fork Works is archived on hazelkahn.com and produced by Tony Ernst.